Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.
Chase Thomas podcast. The Chase Thomas podcast. My nephew needs me to record. See, I already hate it.
All right, hello. Welcome back to a Monday night edition of the Chase Thomas podcast, where I'm still the aforementioned Chase Thomas, and I am joined by what's left of Mr. Evan Swords of 49ers Hub after a weekend in Scottsdale, Arizona. Evan, how was your weekend? I'm concerned to ask. Are you okay?
I'm physically, mentally, and spiritually beaten. I don't know. I had an incredible weekend. It was great to see friends. Got to celebrate an awesome bachelor party. Clearly have no voice, but oh boy. Going to two 49ers games in 2 weeks back to back and them losing both times is not fun, my friend.
No, I don't know how you do it. I don't know how you bounce back. And it's always one of those things where I see it happening. You and I being friends and seeing your stuff and the difference in our lives is funny to me. But it just one of those things where I see it and I'm like, oh, Evan tomorrow. I'll check back on Evan tomorrow. I'm a little concerned, but we'll check back on tomorrow. And then No. You can do it. You can do the weekend thing and then be back to normal on the weekdays. I can't do that anymore.
Yeah, I do. It probably sounds like I'm a degenerate piece of shit.
No, that's not what we're suggesting whatsoever.
No. But what I'm saying is I do take very good care of my body during the week and when I'm not going on these trips. So I think it's probably one of the only reasons that I actually have like the energy to do so.
Well, there you go. There you go. Did you have fun at least?
I had a blast. I really did.
What was the highlight?
Cardinals Stadium was incredible. Absolutely. It was a very, very, very much so enjoyed the stadium. We took a party bus there. We had a suite, free beer, free food. Incredible view. Truly, truly incredible view. It was a great time.
Okay. I like it. Well, don't forget, folks, you can find Evan on Twitter at @Burner_Swords. Follow myself at @Chase_Thomas. Go check out ChaseThomasPodcast.com today for access to all of our previous episodes. If you have a question for Evan or myself for our Monday NFL show, email us at ChaseThomasPodcast@gmail.com. Again, that is ChaseThomasPodcast@gmail.com. Be a patron at patreon.com/ChaseThomasWriter. And lastly, make sure to subscribe to the newsletter, the daily sports writing newsletter that I do at sportsrenaissanceman.substack.com. Again, that is sportsrenaissanceman.substack.com. Evan, we have to start with our favorite segment to kick off our NFL program. Sir, it's our time, our team, the Niners and the Falcons. Let's start with your 49ers, where the Cardinals are now the lone unbeaten team in the NFL. Your San Francisco 49ers lose their third straight game. Rondale Moore had one of the most disgusting catches I've ever seen in this one. Max Williams got knocked out for the year in this game. Rodney Hudson got knocked out in this game, the center for Arizona. The Cards moved to 5-0 for the first time since 1974, which I believe they were in St. Louis for, I want to say. I don't think they were actually in, I know they weren't in Arizona, but I think they weren't. Yeah, I think it was St. Louis. But either way, the highlight for me, and you can attest to this too, because I went back and watched this thing, for me was the 49ers went for it on fourth down 5 times. And Arizona got the stop on 4 of those 5 stops. And I still can't wrap my head around how Lance did not score on that bootleg shot at the goal line. I still have no idea how his forward progress got stopped and he did not get in. Is that what defined the game for you?
Yeah, I mean, I obviously have a lot of thoughts. so many. It was really exciting to watch Trey Lance, but he was incredibly underwhelming. I don't think he's going to have any problem becoming a very good quarterback. I think he's got a lot of talent. I mean, another week in a row, I'm saying, what the fuck is Kyle Shanahan doing? I just don't understand it. The coach that was breaking records with Matt Ryan in Atlanta is not here. They ran the ball with Trey Lance 16 times. He has since injured his knee and it might miss the next game, which is 2 weeks away because of a bye. The biggest issue with the 49ers team this year has been that they have been able to get to the end zone or to the red zone, but they've been unable to come back with points. It was something that they heavily criticized Jimmy Garoppolo about. I have a tweet that a lot of people pulled out of the receipts, where I was like, you guys, you know, it's going to be real. And I was saying it almost facetiously, but I was like, it's going to be really funny to all of these people who think that, you know, the 49ers offense, which has been like rumored heavily that basically Kyle thought he can't do his thing with Jimmy. Jimmy can't throw the ball far enough. There's so much that Jimmy can't do. He just can't do his full offense. And I was just like, I just can't wait till Trey starts and you guys realize that this is Kyle's offense. He likes short passes. He doesn't want to take deep shots. And, you know, Trey comes out and the offense literally looked identical. The difference was obviously the running from Trey. Trey was able to extend his play. Like, I mean, the first play of the game, right? They missed a key block and it was, you know, it was, they had essentially Chandler Jones free rushing, and Trey stepped up in the pocket, ran off. I think he ran for like 14 or 16 yards. Those things from Trey were definitely different. But outside of that running, the offense looked the same, had the same problems, couldn't score. 8 trips to the red zone. They scored 1 time.
It's not good. Do you think not having Kittle was a big part of this too?
No, because I mean, the only thing you could maybe make that point for would be maybe the running game, but they haven't used Kittle. He only got 4 targets last week.
Mm-hmm.
So, no, I think Kyle is using Kittle as a blocker, which is hilarious to me because our run game is not even doing well. I have no idea what Kyle's doing. I am a
Trey Lance was your lead runner. Did you see that coming? Like him getting the majority of the carries? Like Trey Sermon got like what, 1? Elijah Mitchell wasn't involved?
Trey Sermon got 1 carry. Yeah, 1 carry, and which is insane to me. Oh, but I knew Kyle is already – it's been very obvious Kyle likes Elijah Mitchell the most.
Mm.
But all of that just straight up, like, no design, no, like, scheme, just literally we're going to run him up the fucking gut. Could not have in my life bet that. But I'm a fan, and I'm most of the time a dumb fan. I'm not going to lie and pretend like I fucking spend time, you know, reading about scheme or learning about X's and O's. No, I'm just a guy that likes to watch football, and I love my team. So I will say when I complain, you know, who cares? I don't know what I'm talking about other than just what I watch and what I can learn from watching. But Baldy, who we all love, Baldy Breakdowns, every Sunday, every Monday on Twitter, one of our favorite things because he's one of the smartest football minds that exists right now. I don't know if you saw those tweets, but Baldy was literally like, I don't even know what to say. He's like, I feel so bad for Trey Lance because no one's helping him. I understand their game plan. I don't understand. Like Baldy, like literally sounded like the dad that you know and love that's like, I'm not mad, I'm just disappointed.
Mm-hmm.
Like, that's how fucking bad this offense looks right now.
Do you think part of this was bad luck, though, too, where Arizona put the ball on the ground four times and they recovered three of their own fumbles? Like, if those go in the hands of the Niners, this is a different game, I think. Some bad luck right there.
No, I'm not gonna think about that, because before this game, they've got the least amount of takeaways in the NFL. So
There's something to that.
I'm not giving that to them, because they can't turn the ball over in the first place. They can't score points. They have Brandon Ayuk, and he got four targets, the same amount of targets that our fullback got. Yes, Juice is incredibly talented, and he's very athletic. He's much more than a fullback. But I don't know if you saw the play where Brandon Ayuk made that ridiculous catch. It was a really good throw from Trey Lance. That play happened, and then they literally went like three series without even looking at Ayuk again. Like, there was more of a game plan yesterday for Mohamed Sanu and Travis Benjamin than Brandon Ayuk. It's illegal. It should be illegal. Like, it's absurd. Marquise Goodwin, who had a decent season when there was literally no other receiver on that team, couldn't do anything with his speed. They never took deep shots with Marquise. There was a couple plays, you know, whatever. But my point is like, Marquise was a better receiver than Travis Benjamin. And like, what are you expecting from the, like, people keep being like, oh, well, they brought Travis Benjamin in because he brings a different speed, different element to the offense. They did nothing with it. Speed, like what? Like, there was the safeties. Well, were they like maybe a couple of yards back? It didn't matter. Debo and Ayuk are clearly the best players on your team when it comes to offensive production, and Kittle's out. And let's not even talk about the fact that Kittle's hurt again. Kittle's always hurt. I love George Kittle. He's a fan favorite. He's easily one of the most the easiest people to root for on earth. He's always fucking hurt. He's always hurt. Every year. So you have Debo, you have Ayuk. They're proven commodities. You don't give them the ball. Debo's having the best year of any. Like, he's like leading the league in receiving yards, and it still seems like he's like got to beg to get the ball. What did you see when you watched it?
I mean, I just feel like Shanahan had a plan. I also thought this was interesting, where this stat I pulled, because he was running for his life. I did not think San Francisco's offensive line played well at all in this game.
Mike McGlinchey had four penalties.
Yeah, that was not good.
It was like he held three times, something like that.
J.J. Watt had the game of his life in Arizona. He had three quarterback hits. He was all over the place. Like, they made him look like it was 2015 all over again. This was interesting. So, I don't know if you noticed this in real time, but the Cardinals batted or tipped four of his pass attempts, that person being Lance, including one on the 4th-and-4 at Arizona's 48 with 7:53 to go. That was the most by a Niners quarterback in the past 10 seasons.
It was one, yeah, like, it almost broke records.
But that was something I had actually jotted down when I saw it in real time. I'm just like, that's a lot of, you don't see that many batted balls down.
Lance is what, 6, what is he, 6'3"?
Mm-hmm.
It's absurd. Like, I don't know if you like noticed it, but he stares down his receivers. It's hilarious to me. Everyone wants to be like, nope, you can't call. He's not like Cap. He's so much better. He's not like Cap. Here we are. He still can't. Like, you have to like give him a limited offense. He's staring down receivers. He's running first. Like, are you telling me that doesn't remind you of early Cap?
I mean, there are a lot of similarities there. But I also think there's still some stuff to like. I still think, I mean, Kyler's ball on Norman, where he hit, who was that, Hop? Who did he hit in the corner over there?
It was Hop.
Yeah, I mean, that's just, like, it was a perfectly timed ball. Like, Norman didn't even have time to look out. Like, it was just, there was some really great stuff. Kyler had a great game. Did not know he had Bruce Lee on his thigh pads. Did you know that?
I did not know that.
Yeah, he's all about Zen. He, Kyler Murray, he's just a cool cat. But we'll see. We'll see what happens. The Niners, we'll see what happens next week. It seems like Jimmy Garoppolo is still the guy going forward, and I think Shanahan made that abundantly clear.
That's the thing. You know, I will say this. And I, you know, I'm not a reporter. I can't stress it enough. You know this. If anybody's listened to me for a while, they know this. I'm just some fucking guy. Okay? But this fucking guy heard from multiple people this weekend that Jimmy was benched. That, yeah, he got hurt. He did. He hurt his calf. Mm. It was a conscious decision that Jimmy was being benched. And he knew it. And that the goal, the idea was they're going Lance forward. There's a lot of things that that make me not know whether or not I agree with that. You know, talking to Kevin Molina with 49ers Hub, like you pointed out a lot of the logical fallacies there. But like to hear two people separately, they weren't even together. I heard this from two separate individuals say that. And then all of a sudden Trey Lance is injured. Like I don't know. The whole I'm getting such Harbaugh like meltdown vibes right now.
Mm.
I don't mean to like be dramatic, but like, is this the best team ever to look this bad from a talent perspective?
I think
the worst thing about this team was supposed to be the corners. The corners are playing decent.
Mm-hmm.
The corners are literally not playing bad at all. Mosley had a great game twice in a row. Josh Norman has no business playing as well as he's playing right now. He just came off the street. He's playing decent football. Like you mentioned, the pass to Hop. No one's defending that. So I can't really blame him for that. But the corners are playing well. It's not the corners losing the game. It's special teams. It's the offensive linemen and the penalties. Not getting a turnover. Like, I don't know, man. By the way, the Ravens just won.
Yeah, that was a crazy inning. I'm going to text some UGA friends and family about that because they always talk about Rodrigo. Very pro hot rod. And
he just lost.
Yeah, he just missed a big kick.
Yep.
Yeah, crazy night in the NFL. Not just there, but we don't really have to get into all that. I think that will play out. It was a pretty self-explanatory thing there. The Falcons, though, the progression of the offensive line. I did not think this would be a thing. I mean, granted, it is the Jets and Washington, but Washington last week, I mean, they have a formidable defensive line, obviously, with Chase Young and company, but this group is playing better. The offensive line's getting better. I don't know. I'm growing more optimistic. Cordero Patterson does everything for this group. Kyle Pitts went over 100 yards in this one, first of a bunch. No Calvin Ridley. Little concerned about what's going on there. He missed this one for personal reasons. Russell Gage still not back. A lot of Christian Blake in this one. The uniforms are atrocious. Like, just burn those. Just burn these. The gradient red and black. I mean, just perplexingly bad look. But you know, defense doing okay. I don't know. The Falcons are fine. And then when you look at the schedule, you're like, oh no, they could be okay. They might be there. I feel like they're just going to win too many games now to get a top pick. But then if you look at the quarterback situation coming into next year's draft, you're like, this is okay, because then next year's quarterback class, I don't know if you're familiar, not looking good at all. So I don't know. The top two picks, North Carolina has gone off the deep end. They just lost at home to Florida State. So Sam Howell might come back. And then you have Spencer Rattler, who got benched this weekend, and his backup came in and beat Texas. So I don't know. The quarterback market at the top of next year's draft is weird, to say the least. You want to run through the games from this weekend, sir?
Yeah. Who won, who lost?
Yeah, I got you. So the NFL took place this weekend. People are saying that there were NFL games outside of our own. We love to talk about our teams, the Falcons and the Niners, but there were other games. The interdivision game along with your own, the Rams 26, Seahawks 17. How in trouble are the Seahawks with Wilson missing so much time?
Oh my God, dude. They're not in trouble. They're done.
So they're out for you.
Before he got injured, there was rumors on Twitter, I don't even remember who it was, saying that like Wilson is still going to seek a trade. And then he got injured.
Has he played his last game as a Seahawk?
You know, it's hard to say that definitively because it's Russell Wilson and he's such a, you know, he is the Seattle Seahawks. But honestly, I could see it. Absolutely.
Where does he want to go, though? Where does he go?
You know,
Aaron Rodgers is on the market, too.
You have to remember. So, okay, so I think maybe you have to think about where Sierra would maybe want to go.
Mm.
He's not going to either LA team.
Yeah, that's not open.
So maybe Las Vegas, they move on from Carr.
Why is that better? Why would you want to go from Seattle to Vegas?
Dude, he might just be ready to leave Seattle. It might not be about what else is out there.
Mm.
What about the Steelers, bro?
Hmm. The Steelers would not be bad. But
that
like
would be a sneaky underdog team.
I mean, that'd be great. Steelers would be.
He gets to go out to Mike Tomlin instead of Pete Carroll.
I mean, I wouldn't hate it. I would not hate it. But there's not a lot of teams. I think the Eagles probably make the most sense to me.
Oh man, I don't know.
The Eagles, maybe Washington. But I mean, Miami maybe. Miami's the most interesting. I wonder if they get in on anything because I mean, I guess people are waiting to see what happens with Deshaun Watson there. But that would be bad. And teams, I know you're listening. Don't do that. That is my advice. Don't do something like that. Yeah, I don't know. I the Seattle stuff could get really ugly in a hurry. And I don't know. We haven't seen this in a really long time. They have been stable, double-digit win machines. And if they fall off a cliff, man, I don't know. Pete Carroll would be out. If you trade Wilson, like Pete Carroll's the oldest coach in the NFL. Does he retire at the end of the year? Do you just do this whole thing? Do you just really blow it all up and do a full rebuild? I don't know. It's interesting.
I don't know. Honestly, I don't know. But I said it and I'll say it again. I'm very excited for the Seattle Seahawks as fans, as a team, as an organization, get to finally, I don't want to see Russell injured. I hate that he broke his streak. It fucking sucks. And it is so like ironic that of all the things, Wilson ends up, it's his finger, right?
Yeah.
You know, he's running all over the place constantly and he ends up breaking a finger. But I will say I'm very excited for this team to understand finally what it's like to not have that good of a quarterback and how fucking worthless they are for giving him such lacking of talent for so long.
Mm.
This is a two-win team without Wilson.
I don't disagree. This is bad. I mean, Gino looked okay, but I don't think this is gonna go well down the stretch here. Vikings 19, Lions 17. My question to you, are we okay with Dan Campbell crying in that press conference after the fact?
I am.
Okay.
I am, but only because of what I've seen from the Lions so far. We talked a little bit about it. I watched them play. I feel like the Lions, where they aren't a good team, they are playing hard. And they've had some close games. They had another close game today. I do think they're not that far away.
They're fighting for their coach.
Yeah, 100%. And I think when you see what they've done for Dan already, and it's clear there's been reports that they do like him a lot, when you see Dan act the way he acts, you have to go, okay, well, this is why. Whatever version of Campbell you see, that's clearly the team that's fighting for him. And I mean, they didn't do as well last week as they did this week, but they're literally just an inch away. It seems like every week from a win, they're playing hard. And that's really, with a team like the Lions that just traded away their franchise quarterback that is rebuilding, that just traded for Jared Goff, who's not great. I mean, I don't know. I'm happy with it. I'm a fan of Campbell, and I didn't think I was going to be.
Yeah, same. Still concerned about his caffeine intake, though.
Yeah,
still a little concerned.
Terrifying.
That order is still preposterous to me, and that's coming from someone who drinks a lot of coffee. Saints 33, Washington 22. Another horrible Taylor Heineke game. Washington is awful. The Saints, okay, they're getting a little bit less Jekyll and Hyde, and Jameis had some bombs to Marquez Callaway in this game. Are we ready to get Jameis Winston back in the MVP conversation?
Absolutely not. I think Jameis is going to continue to be the way he is.
Okay.
For his entire tenure, he'll have good days. He'll have bad days. You know, they've got a lot of talent around him.
That's where I want Wilson to go, by the way, is New Orleans.
The Saints? I mean, that would be the perfect.
I mean, as a Falcons fan, that's my living hell. But I think from a fit-wise, and you pair him with Sean Payton, like the way Sean Payton used Drew Brees for the last 7 years, I mean, that's just poof, poof.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I mean, that's the best case scenario for Russell Wilson.
Yeah, we'll see. We'll see. Pats 25, Texans 22. Okay, the Pats almost lost this game, and I have to ask you, based on what we've seen from Davis Mills and just this Houston team this year, Evan, had the Pats blown this and actually lost to this Houston Texans team, the Nick Caseria Bowl, would we have had the Bill Belichick might be needing to retire conversation? Like, is it time? Is it time to go, okay, what are we doing here? What are we spinning our wheels?
I mean, you've got to remember, Tom Brady went to the Buccaneers and won a Super Bowl. And this week, yesterday, Bill Belichick almost lost to the worst team in the NFL. Mm-hmm. So, you know, should he retire? That's all on him. He's done enough. He's the greatest coach of all time. He can do whatever he wants. But I think he should really be having an honest conversation with himself of, does he want to do this? Because this is a full rebuild, right? This is a rookie quarterback. This is, you know, getting rid of some cap casualties that you really – you know, you made a lot of deals for Tom Brady, you know, to get the type of team that he wanted. It's a long. It looks like it's going to be a long road back to anything that might be a Super Bowl contender. So I think he's got to ask himself if that's what he wants to do.
It's weird. The Pats are in such a weird place right now. The Bucs, you mentioned Tom Brady, 45, Dolphins 17. Has Miami officially quit on this season and quit on Flores? Like, this is just bad. Like, this is not even just like Tua being out. Like, this is the kind of game where it's like, oh, the Miami's not coming back. Like, Miami's dug themselves way too big of a hole. They're not even competing with the Patriots in the middle tier of the AFC East. They're just objectively one of the worst teams in football. All of a sudden, the offensive line is in shambles. Chris Greer really messed up there. Developing this offensive line, Austin Jackson doesn't look like the answer at left tackle. Like, there's just all kinds of issues with this Miami team, and I don't know, man. Like, this is bad, right?
I feel like for the longest time we've always been like, yeah, is Miami turning a corner? I mean. We did it with Tannehill back in the day. We did it before that. Like, it's always like, maybe. And then they just come back down to reality. I don't know how the Miami Dolphins have been this bad for this long, but, like, this is insane. The Buccaneers are a great team. You know, they did lose their starting quarterback, but I don't know, man. It's just bad all around.
I don't know. I think it's going to get worse. And I think people need to be on Brian Flores, Chris Greer watch. I don't know. We'll see. Packers 25, Bengals 22, just the worst kind of game for the kickers involved here. But our friend of the pod, Joe Burrow, thankfully he is okay. Really taking a beating early in his career in Cincinnati. But would you say this is a good loss for Cincy, Evan Swords, or just a really, really bad win for Green Bay?
No, I think it's a good loss for the Bengals. You know, you got to remember how short amount of time it was that the Bengals were really bad not too long ago. They've played well the beginning of the season, and they're going up against a really good Packers team, and they're almost winning that game. They're a field goal away. And I think when you're a rebuilding team with a young quarterback with a lot of talent, like, this is kind of what you expect in those. This is what growing pains mean. Going up against a powerhouse, going up against Aaron Rodgers and almost getting it. And then maybe next year you actually beat him, right? And so that's the type of growth you want to see. I think Burrow's looking really good. I think a lot of the things you were most worried about with the Bengals, the offensive line, the defense, you know, they're playing well. They're just not a serious contender by any means yet.
No, not yet. The Steelers 27, Broncos 19. Was this the biggest stunner for you this weekend?
Yeah, it makes no sense. Like, but then again, I kind of told you that I wasn't really that impressed with the Broncos too, and you were all over that. So I guess we should be asking you: was this the big stunner for you this weekend?
Yes, based on like what we saw from Big Ben, what we saw from Teddy. I mean, the Steelers did lose Juju Smith-Schuster for the rest of the season. In this one, defense played well for them, but yeah, I mean, they were able to run the ball too. Najee Harris had his best game as a Steeler. And that was a huge difference for them. But I don't know. I think this was pretty bonkers. But also, the Steelers were not going to be like one of the worst teams in football. It's just that Ben Roethlisberger is just now one of the worst quarterbacks in football. So I think this is a blip. And Denver may have some offensive skill talent problems, because when you look at where they're at across the board, a little concerned outside of Cortland Sutton. Noah Fant, not a big day again. Need him to do more. Philly 21, Carolina 18. Were you okay with Jalen Hurts hitting the Superman pose in this one?
I mean, if we're getting to a point where maybe this is like a black quarterback thing where it's their way of, you know, being proud of their accomplishments on the football field, I'd love that, because, you know, I remember Cap did it once back in the day. Obviously, it is Cam's thing.
Right.
So, you know, if it's something like that, I'd love it. You know, if it was just something that Hurts wanted to do in the moment, I like that too. You know, celebrate your wins.
I had seen that it was something about that he has done it in the past. Like, this may have been a thing for him a long time ago. But I don't know. I thought that was interesting. I do think it another interesting. So Sam Darnold, the Panthers have now lost two straight. Panthers are kind of reeling after starting off 3-0. This comes from Cat Scratch Reader. I wanted to read you. Quote, "And for goodness sake, can we please get a left tackle? We've only been trying to solidify that spot since 2011, because they did sign Taylor Moton, who has been great at right tackle, but I think they had him playing some left tackle this game. But I think it's about time we actually do so," end quote. They don't. That's like the under-talked about part of Sam Darnold's struggles, and I think he threw three picks yesterday. Not a great look. No Christian McCaffrey. Chuba Hubbard is just not what Christian McCaffrey is to this team. They need him back. Like, this, it's very clear that Darnold needs the elite talent around him, and they need Christian McCaffrey to make this thing move, because this offense was bad, and Sam Darnold looked bad, but he got hit a lot, and I don't know. I think Carolina had a stable left tackle and a stable offensive line. Maybe this is a little bit different, but if the offensive line is going to look like this the majority of the season, I think Sam Darnold is in real trouble. What about you?
I just think that there's so many teams in the NFL right now that fit the mold of the Panthers and the Broncos, right? These are teams that are like, they're playing decent football, they're winning some games, but it's still early in the season. You know, I think the Colts are a good example tonight, right? Like, anything can happen in the beginning of the season, because teams are still trying to figure things out. They're still trying to figure the offense out, figure the defense out. Try things that work, try things that don't work. And I think you're going to see teams like Broncos, who, yeah, they start out 3-1, but I wouldn't be surprised if they end up 500, maybe a couple games over. Like, in the beginning of the season, things are weird. And I don't think the Panthers are a serious playoff contender team.
Especially, I don't either.
Sam Darnold.
I don't either. Bears 20, Raiders 9. This was the last game that John Gruden would coach with the Las Vegas Raiders. We did not know that beforehand, but obviously, based on when Mark Davis got this those emails on Friday, it looks like he should not have coached this game. But the Bears suddenly over 500, 1-2 straight. I don't know. I thought this was interesting from Windy City Gridiron, great Bears blog. I wanted to read this quote: "That has led to an NFL high 18 sacks for the Bears and a top 10 mark in takeaways. Both good. They have a new DC this season, and he's paying dividends because the Raiders offense scored just 9 points on Sunday. We're held to under 300 offensive yards for the first time this season. It's all great. Justin Fields not having to throw the ball a bunch. He's able to do the little things in this offense. Khalil Herbert broke out. Like, I love that Chicago is just like running back you for guys who I watched a bunch in college who no one talked about but were awesome, like David Montgomery, Khalil Herbert, Tariq Cohen. That's just like where good college running backs go to prosper. Overlooked ones, I should say. This is all going to end very quickly, Evan Swords, because do you know who Chicago's next 5 games are?
How was that?
Packers, Bucks, Niners, Steelers, Ravens.
Yeah, that is tough with a capital T.
Like, the Bears, like, this is fine, but Justin Fields, I think you're in for a rough next couple weeks, but we'll see. Cowboys
Justin,
for, oh yeah.
Justin Fields needs to pull Jimmy Garoppolo calf injury.
Yeah, that's a brutal stretch. Cowboys 44, Giants 20. Saquon's ankle, did you see what it looked like after that injury on Sunday?
No.
It was awful. Like, it was gruesome. And they were, like, wondering on the broadcast, like, is he coming back in? It's like, no, I don't think he's going back in. His ankle is the size of a watermelon. But Kadarius Toney goes off. And do you know what Kadarius Toney did in this game? It's the highlight of the game.
Punch someone in the face?
You're right, but he punched a Cowboys player with a helmet on. Close fist. Why are NFL players still doing this? It is the dumbest thing you could do as a football player, is punch a dude with a helmet on.
I mean, I think it's just instinct.
Why are we still doing this?
I think that's, at the end of the day, it's literally just instinct.
Is it? But you're still looking at it. You're still looking at the helmet when you're connecting. Like, you're looking at what you're doing.
It's fight or flight. I think it's really just what it comes down to.
Have you ever been in a fight?
Once.
Interesting. Did you win?
Yes. I am not a fighter. I think I'm probably a fairly capable man, but I just, nothing, like, I remember, mm-hmm. I'll never forget, I was one of the first people to have an apartment outside of high school, mm-hmm. with a couple friends, so we used to throw parties, and our buddy was there, and he was too drunk, and he was like, we had a ping pong table where the dining room table should be, because we were degenerates playing beer pong all the time. And he was like going to knock it over. And I was like, yo, you got to like not lean on the ping pong table because you're going to knock it over. And he didn't like that. And I was like, hey, man, like, and I came up, like, you got to like stop it. This is not a very nice ping pong table. It will break. And he punched me in the face.
What?
But he wasn't. He's a smaller guy, you know. And so like he punched me in the face, like, and I just basically kept explaining. Like, I didn't even like stop. I just like continued to be like, come on, man, you got to move. And my friends like had to like literally pick him up physically and like DJ Jazzy Jeff Fresh Prince of Bel-Air threw him out our front door. And then, you know, I've been punched in the face a couple times just because of dumb guys being dumb guys. Like once at a party when we were at University of Oregon for a guy that we were like kicking out of. You know, I guess really just kicking people out of parties is where it happens. And he punched me in the face and I was just like laughed. I was like, whatever. And like my friend like ran up and like tried to fight him because he was like offended for me. I'm just not really a fighter.
I'm not really either. I don't think I would win many fights. I don't think it would go well for me most of the time.
Yeah, I get it.
But I did see some crazy stuff this weekend in Knoxville. Like that's part of the territory living in a college town, especially after games and just seeing what happens after. Bills 38, Chiefs 20 after a 9.5 hour weather delay. The Bills take care of this one. But I thought this was interesting for a lot of reasons, Evan. The Bills and the Chargers, I think, are the two best teams in the AFC, and I don't think it's particularly close at this point in the season. This comes from Go Long TD, a great website, friend of the pod, Tyler Dunn. Quote, when the Bills have the ball, however, it's a mismatch. The Chiefs are not just struggling on defense. They are garbage. They rank last in yards per play and 30th in rush defense and yards per attempt. Pass defense. He wrote that before this game. That is what happened in this game, where Josh Allen couldn't do anything intermediate, anything close. He only hit bombs and ran the football. Like, Josh Allen and Patrick Mahomes led their team in rushing at the half, I believe, in this one. And Allen was just on fire. Like, his bombs, like, he had some open guys, and I think it was Diggs, and I think it was Emmanuel Sanders. He found Dawson Knox, who has just turned into a stud for them. But they knew what they needed to do. Sorensen is just awful. He is killing the Chiefs. And Tyrann Mathieu, that meme of him,
it's so bad.
Just being mad at him over and over again. The Chiefs defense is broken, and they don't have the pieces to fix it all in one season. So I'm going to go ahead and write off the Chiefs, just because that defense cannot be fixed in like one trade deadline. I don't think you can do that. So I think they have to do a whole adjustment. And it stinks, because that offense is still great, but I don't know. I think the Chiefs have real problems. They're 2-3 now. And Allen, big time field, big time downfield throws. He was 4-4, 172 yards and 2 touchdowns. Allen might be my MVP right now. What about you?
I mean, what do you think? I was worried about the Bills game week one. I was like, God, was I really that wrong about the Bills? And then this came out, and I was just like, oh, yeah, there it is. Like, it is thoroughly impressive to see what the Bills are doing right now. Allen is just, you know, as a guy who's had Jimmy Garoppolo and Trey Lance and Colin Kaepernick and Alex Smith, who in their own right can be, you know, good quarterbacks in certain situations, but it is, you know, watching the Chiefs and the Bills as a 49ers fan yesterday, I was like, God, must be nice. Like, there is no pass that Josh Allen can't make.
He's also just fun as crap to watch, man. That dude is just fun to watch. He is electric, and you never know what he's going to do with the football. Man, if the Super Bowl was today, like, our two favorites, can you imagine before the season? Like, I would love to go back on our previews and list this, but, like, who? No one honestly had Bills Cardinals as a realistic Super Bowl matchup before the season, or even Chargers Cardinals.
I definitely was higher on the Chargers than most, and I did have the Bills as my Super Bowl team.
I did too, actually. No, I didn't. I wish I could say that. I had Browns, Rams, I think, which is still in play. Still in play. Well, let's talk about that last game real quick. I wanted to save Chargers, Browns for last. Browns 42, Chargers 47. I'm ready to say, as of right now, Justin Herbert is the more electric quarterback. Just some bonker stats from him. Through his first two seasons, no other quarterback has as many games with 3 touchdowns and 0 interceptions. 7, as well as games with over 300 passing yards coming from SB Nation's LA Chargers blog. The only player to have, this is for Derwin James though, as well. The only NFL player to have 14 tackles, because he had 14 tackles in this game, in any half of a regular or postseason game in the last 15 seasons, Derwin James. 14 in one half.
It's so
what a game. The Chargers are incredible.
Yeah, it is so fun watching them. And it just makes me so happy that Justin Herbert was the guy that they were like, oh, his personality, he's too much of a pussy, he's too quiet, whatever. And he's just like, I will murder you on the field. I will ruin everything you've ever loved. Any hope you have in your team, I will end it.
Do you know who could use Justin Herbert right now?
Who?
The Oregon Ducks.
Okay, this is an NFL podcast, so I'm going to kindly need you to fuck off. And to be honest with you, Justin Fields has played much better football since he left the Oregon Ducks.
Who?
Justin Fields.
Justin Fields?
Oh, excuse me, Justin Herbert, sorry.
Okay, I was like, what are we doing? Okay, yes, he has. He has been better, which nobody saw that coming. But he's been great. He's been great. Mr. Swartz, are you ready to run through our picks this week? Do you want to put the timer on the clock? He's so tired, folks. He's so washed. You're almost there.
I got to say, I'm doing pretty good, though, for a guy.
You are.
Been aggressive. And we're going into week seven. Is that correct?
No, this is week six. Week seven for college football, though.
Okay. First off, we got the Eagles and the Bucks, and we'll be both taking the Bucks.
Mm-hmm.
And then Dolphins and Jaguars. What a sad game.
Oh, this one's in London, I think.
Yeah.
Man, this is just what an awful.
I'm going Dolphins just out of my pure disdain for Urban Meyer, and I would love to see him go 0-6.
I think I'm going Jaguars.
A little bit better of a team.
I think I'm going Jaguars here. I think the Dolphins' offense is broken, like legitimately just broken. Give me the Jags.
I would love to have him go 0-6 in London. Having him for his first win being outside of the country would be funny too. Vikings and Panthers. I'm going Vikings.
I think the Panthers are a better team. Give me the Panthers. Bounce back week for them.
It'd be possible. Chargers, Ravens. Fuck.
This is going to be delightful.
Can they not flex that?
Yeah, that is. But it does feel like the Ravens have been on primetime a bunch already this
year. Seahawks and Steelers, you gotta flex that.
Oh, no. Oh, no. Oof. Well, folks, if you wanted to go to that pumpkin patch with your girl this weekend, Sunday night might be the time to do it. Pencil it in. Sunday night. Date night. Because you can miss Steelers Seahawks, I promise you.
100%. I will. Yeah, absolutely.
I'm not watching Geno versus 2021 Ben Roethlisberger. Yeah. Give me the Ravens.
Oh man, I like that. I'm going with the Chargers. You go with the Ravens. Makes sense. No faith ever.
I mean, Lamar's pretty good, and the Ravens are a pretty good football team. Very different offense. They are completely abandoning the run and going downfield all the time. Hollywood
Lamar
Brown,
was,
downfield
Lamar
assassin.
Was dealing tonight. He was throwing very well. Rams and Giants. Shitty game.
Yes, Rams. Does Joe Judge get fired for this one?
No, they're not going to. Okay. They might go to the rest of the year without firing him, which is they should fire him tomorrow. They should fire him tomorrow just so they can beat the Raiders.
Mm.
I mean, not that they can hire anyone right now anyways.
Oh, man, this next game looks terrible, too. But there are a lot of terrible games this week.
There's been a lot of terrible games in general. Texans and Colts. I got the Colts.
I got the Colts, too, but oh.
Yeah, oh. I don't watch that game at all. Chiefs and okay.
Chiefs, Washington. I mean, Chiefs, obviously, but oh, the Alex Smith Bowl.
Yeah, I don't want to watch that at all. Bears, Packers.
I want to watch this one.
I mean, I don't feel bad.
I'm curious. Does Aaron Rodgers get hit a bunch? Is Chicago able to limit what Aaron Rodgers does? This is a close game. This would be a huge game for Justin Fields. That being said, still give me the Packers, but I would not be surprised if this one's close too.
I would agree. I think it could be close, but yeah, Packers. Bengals and Lions. Do the Bengals bounce back, or does Campbell stop crying?
I think the Bengals get this one. Man, the Lions, he's going to get a win. Campbell, you're going to get a win. It's just not going to be this week.
Yeah, man, I'm going to take the Lions, but I keep taking them and they keep losing, so I feel bad. Cardinals and Browns, this is going to be a good game, too.
Browns can't catch a break right now in the scheduling. Back-to-back, Chargers, Cardinals. I think the Browns here. I think this is where the Cardinals' luck runs out. I think the Browns bounce back.
I'm taking the Browns this week, and that was going to be kind of my Hail Mary to like kind of get back into this. But yeah, I mean, I need the Cardinals to lose, so I would like to see that happen.
Good 4 o'clock game.
Cowboys Patriots. That should be not a good game.
It'll be interesting though. It'll be interesting. I will not watch that one. Browns Cardinals will have my attention, but give me the Cowboys. Patriots can't score enough. There's no way they can keep up with the Cowboys offense. And Cowboys defense, legit. Takeaway machines. Dan Quinn's done a really good job there.
Do we not remember when I
Quandre Diggs, man.
When I said on this podcast, I want the 49ers to sign Dan Quinn. And you gave me shit for it.
Well, I mean, to be fair, I'd just gone through multiple seasons of this and just...
As a head coach.
The track record was not good.
As a head coach.
I mean, he was calling the defense too. Okay.
I mean, Kyle's calling the fucking offense. How's that going? Fuck, man.
Give it to D'Amico Ryan's time. He might
D'Amico's,
be
D'Amico's, by the way, D'Amico's doing a pretty good job. I was kind of not there, but he is. Raiders Broncos. This is a weird
Broncos, obviously, but yeah, I just Raiders. Oh my goodness.
I just don't like when these two teams play each other. I'm never interested in the game.
Oh, I'm usually in great history between these two teams, but man, Raiders season already over. Everything's bad.
Poor Derek Carr. I am interested just to see how the team plays. What do we got? Steelers, Seahawks.
I guess Steelers.
All right. I think, yeah. I think, like I
Geno's
said.
Geno's not going into Pittsburgh winning this game. I don't think the Seahawks will win a game without Russell Wilson.
Yeah, I don't think they will either. Agreed.
Last game.
Titans.
Ooh, Monday night. The Monday night miracle.
I got to say, man, the Titans have looked trash this year. I think we got a little bit excited with Tannehill, and we were expecting this to be like a long-term thing. But like AJ Brown's looking bad, he's looking bad. I'm taking the Bills in maybe a pretty handedly fashion.
The Titans' offense is rolling. Like Derrick Henry's numbers are just preposterous. Like preposterous what he's doing. 31 touches a game. He's on pace for 480 carries, I think, this year. It's just. It's insanity what his workload is. Will he be able to do it against this Bills front? I don't know. No one stopped him to this point, though. So I think the Bills win, but I think this is going to be like a 45-38 type game. Would not be surprised if the Titans are in this with 2 minutes to go. Give me the Bills, though.
Agreed. Is this the fastest we've ever done a podcast?
I think we're both tired.
I mean I don't know if you are, but I can say with my whole heart that I am.
Mm. Hey, you know, we're efficient. We know what we're doing. We're efficient. Do you want to do 20 minutes on Gruden?
I don't want to do 20 minutes on Gruden, but I will say this. A lot of people are going to talk about John Gruden specifically. KP, who runs Niners Nation, the SB Nation blog, said it very well tonight. I want people to understand something, that John Gruden is not an outlier. This is an old boys club of NFL head coaches, and I guarantee you that the majority of them talk like this. And it is unfortunate that, like they mentioned right now, Allen, the old Washington football team, you know, owner, right? They did this entire investigation on Gruden. All of these emails were with Allen. We've yet to hear one thing about the Allen, about Allen's side or what he might have said. And the reason why is because owners run this league. This is John Gruden is a piece of shit. I mean, he, like Adam Schefter said, hit the nail on the head, right? He went out, he literally did, he offended every single person he possibly could. LGBTQ, minorities, you know, it's just everybody. He is a scumbag, but these people exist a lot more than we want to admit. And what he said, we need to stop accepting that as the norm. And we need to just make sure that that when things like this happens, that this is the reaction we have. Get these people the fuck out of the NFL. There's no room for it. It's 2021.
I agree. I think there have to be consequences, and I think the only way to move forward is swift actions. And it's also kind of a bad look that he quit and they didn't fire him, like the fact that he resigned. And I don't know. It's an awakening, and I think there should be more to come, because there's no way in that, 365,000 email list that he's the only person implicated. And I don't know. I suspect it's going to get worse, and there's going to be more stuff that comes out, my guess. But we shall see. We shall see. Mr. Swords, we can check you out and all the good folks at 49ershub.com. Go follow you on Twitter at @Burner_Swords. Follow myself at @Chase_Thomas. If you like listening to Evan and I, Evan, what are the good folks do?
I'm gonna make it really easy tonight. I left the tank, but I'm gonna be very, very clear.
Mm-hmm.
You have five weekdays in the week.
Mm-hmm.
Right. You get your 2 days off, like most people do. To relax, reset, rewind, or in my case, aggressively drink. But you get 5 days in the week to get your job done, to do your work before that weekend comes. And I need five stars, one for each day of the week that you are working, for the amount of work that this man puts in 7 days a week constantly. And I'm also just because I'm asking nicely.
That was the nicest you've asked thus far.
You know, I'm feeling vulnerable.
Mr. Swartz, I'll talk to you next week.
All right, buddy.
All right, we are back on this Monday edition of the Chase Thomas Podcast, where I am now joined by someone who watched OU Texas lose their collective minds on Saturday afternoon. Austin Curtwright is here. Austin, good evening, sir. How are you?
Good. How are you?
Not too bad. Not too bad. Now that you've had 48 hours or so to let all this sink in, to really think about what happened in Oklahoma's come from behind stunner over the Horns, how would you articulate what happened on Saturday against Texas?
Well, it was a wild one for sure, but just to put it in one word, I'd say chaotic. You know, this was obviously Texas gave out to the huge lead. At one point, a Fox ran on the field in the first quarter. Spencer Rattler, the preseason Heisman favorite, gets benched for Caleb Williams. The huge comeback, biggest in the showdown history. And then, you know, combine all of that with it being surrounded in the middle of a state fair in the first year back from, you know, the pandemic of that event happening. So it was madness. It was one of the, if not the craziest games I've probably ever witnessed in my entire life. So that's just, to put it pretty simply, just pretty chaotic.
I like it. I like it. What about Lincoln Riley's game plan in this game? Did you think it was effective when you were watching this game, as someone who is more familiar than myself with just what he's trying to do week in and week out, especially with this group? Offensively, was his game plan, was it effective? Did you like how he was scheming to get guys open? Did you like what he was actually giving to Spencer Rattler to do? Was he asking too much of Rattler? Like, what about Lincoln's game plan stood out to you in this one?
So I don't necessarily know that the game plan changed a whole lot from quarterback to quarterback, but Rattler is not a mobile guy. He's not going to run around and scramble out, but and the offensive line has struggled this year for OU just a lot. It's been probably its biggest question mark for the team all season. And Rattler is, you know, a guy that is a veteran guy for whatever, 2 years now, but I wouldn't necessarily say that the game plan was too much different. I think that Spencer Rattler adds just a different sort of play style to Caleb Williams, who obviously replaced him. But, you know, if you look back at some of Caleb's second half highlights, you know, to say, most of them were sort of predicated on him getting outside the pocket or throwing on the run, because, you know, there's kind of guys in the backfield like really frequently if you just watch the tape. So I think that's one thing that Rattler struggles with. And, you know, that's not saying that Rattler's not a good quarterback, in my mind, at least. I don't think that he is not capable of winning games and it's anything that Lincoln Riley's not doing for him to excel in. I think it's just more of, you know, with this team's play style, maybe he might not have much success as someone that can, you know, run around as much.
How do you think he handled the benching and everything afterwards?
I think he probably handled it like most players would. First, he obviously got benched and then came back in and had the 2-point conversion that tied the game, that Lincoln Riley said was the biggest play of the game, that he trusted Rattler to come back in on after sitting for three quarters. I think that showed, that was kind of testament to how he, recovered from that. But after the game, the team was celebrating. Everyone was taking their turns with the golden hat on. You look on one side and all these cameras are going over to Caleb Williams, and Lincoln Riley and his wife are trying to go hug Caleb Williams. Then you look off to the side and Spencer Rattler is just sort of lost in a crowd of OU players. And then Spencer Rattler actually left early to go to the locker room and just completely, you know, disregarded taking the team picture at the end with the full team. So, that's something that has not been addressed yet. Obviously, we're going to talk to Lincoln Riley tomorrow about that, or this is on a Monday. So this would be, we'll talk to Lincoln Riley on Tuesday. So we'll see about that. But that's sort of some of the questions that are unanswered right now.
True or false? Spencer Rattler starts next week for the Sooners.
Oh, that's a tough one. I'm going to go ahead and say false, but Lincoln Riley today said on Big 12 coaches call, said that he's not committed to either guy. He's going to see what happens out at practice. So I totally wouldn't be surprised if Lincoln trots out Spencer Rattler on Saturday as the starter. I'm sure he'll get booed again by the crowd if they see his name pop up on the video board pregame. And then, you know, to combat that again, there's a chance that he plays both of them. I think it's so up in the air. Lincoln Riley's not a guy to be super open about those things pretty typically. I'm sure when the updated depth chart comes out on Thursday or Friday this week, it's going to say Spencer Rattler or Caleb Williams. So it's one of those things that I don't think we'll have any idea about until the game starts on Saturday.
I've lived through this season here in Tennessee with Hendon Hooker and Joe Milton. Sounds a lot like Joe Milton early on before they finally just was like, all right, he's played too well. We just got to go with Hooker here. That might be what it is with Williams. And the crowd was not happy in Neyland for weeks with the Milton overthrows. But I want to ask you this too, is just that, like, you mentioned the offensive line woes for the Sooners this year. Is it that Spencer is not really a runner and he's more of a pocket guy? Like, him playing behind a poor offensive line lends itself to being more just easier for somebody like Williams to make stuff happen, to do things outside of the pocket, and to thrive when things break down around him, versus Rattler, who may just be one of those quarterbacks who just needs a great offensive line in front of him to do the kind of stuff that he does in a really, really efficient way. Like, are we getting any boos? Are we getting any of the struggles? Are we getting any of the benchings if Oklahoma's offensive line is not having the problems that it's having?
I'm going to go ahead and say no, I think, to that. Spencer has had his fair share of struggles. He's decision-making was a big one. There's been a few times this season where it's just him forcing a pass, or which we haven't really seen too much from him. But, you know, it's happened a few times. But I just think that Caleb Williams adds a wrinkle to this offense that Spencer Rattler can't provide just with his feet. Like I said, just his ability to buy time and, you know, make plays out of the pocket that Rattler can't quite get to is definitely something new. And that's something that Lincoln Riley's proved to be able to have these high-powered offenses with Kyler and Jalen Hurts, and even Baker could scramble a little bit. And I think it adds a whole nother layer to that. Obviously, there in the second half, there was a few plays where Caleb was in the backfield paired with Kitty Brooks, and they were doing – just these like direct snaps to Kennedy Brooks, but like at an angle almost while he was in the backfield. And I think that is something that, you know, adds a whole nother thing you have to worry about is Caleb Williams' legs. And then obviously, you know, he opens up so much like read option game, and that helps a running back like Eric Gray, who obviously came from Tennessee, which I'm sure you know of him, but you know, he's more of a shiftier guy, and he's not going to be, you know, always super leaned on to run in between the tackles. And you kind of need to, you know, rely on the offensive line for runs like that. And I think that helps just open up so many more people, you know, in that aspect.
Hmm. In terms of the Longhorns, do you think Sark matched Lincoln with his in-game coaching for the majority of this one? Did you think they were on the same level, or did you see stuff that Sark made errors that Lincoln pounced on, and Lincoln actually won the coaching duel here for part one here?
I think Sark, for the most part, I'm not in the rooms, but you know, from my perspective, it looked like he called a pretty good game. I mean, OU's defense has been pretty improved this year and pretty solid, but I mean, he hung 48 points up and a ton of yards. And obviously, at times, you could tell he was clearly attacking some of those weaker points of OU's defense, which is some of those, you know, some Jaden Davis, who started at cornerback, he sort of attacked him. And that was proven early on with first play of the game, went, you know, bubble screen and attacked Jaden Davis, and he got burnt for 75 yards. And then, you know, there are other times where Xavier Worthy, the freshman, was on the outside and they were just throwing it up, and Jaden Davis just kept getting burnt. So, you know, I think that his game plan was, I mean, pretty good. Obviously, he's sort of up there with some of the, you know, bigger offensive minds or more talented offensive minds in college football. And, you know, I'd say that offensively, Texas played really well. I just think that sort of in the end, Texas' defense gave a little bit too much. And, you know, that's kind of hard to plan for when you game plan for Spencer Rattler and then someone completely different comes in halfway through the game that you have to adjust for.
Absolutely. Is the defense good enough? Is Grinch's unit good enough to run the gauntlet in the college football playoff?
You know, I think that's the biggest question over the years. And I'm going to go ahead and say yes. I think what's been pretty telling about this defense compared to years past is this defense isn't probably not elite. You know, they still have time to prove themselves, of course, but when this defense needs to come up big, they have. You know, look back to week one, and even Tulane has the chance to drive down the field and win it and come up with a stop. Nebraska has a chance to go down the field and tie it. They get a stop. And then Texas game last week, Texas only scored 10 points in the second half. So I think they're going to be good enough. They're not great. I think a great phrase is sort of, you know, describe this defense. The season has been bend, don't break. Mm-hmm. You know, they're not going to necessarily wow you with anything, but I think they're going to, you know, do just enough. And I think that there was a pretty obvious sort of spark that Caleb Williams gave to this team. I think he sort of displays more of that edge that, you know, I don't know if this is a fair comparison, but he sort of has that edge that Baker and Kyler had. It seems so much different when he's commanding a team. And I think the players kind of rallied around him. It seemed like he almost elevated everyone's game when he came into the game. And that hasn't necessarily been seen when Spencer was out there previously. And in the second half, I think that was sort of proven. And that OU played easily its best ball of the year in the second half, in that fourth quarter as well.
I like it. Something that I think is interesting too, when I think about it, because the Big 12 just shoots itself in its foot with their kind of scheduling, and this is obviously going to change when the new members come in and OU and Texas depart. But is there a team in the Big 12 right now that you think OU has no interest in playing twice this season that could derail them, that could knock them out of the playoff? Is there one matchup? Is it Baylor? Is it Oklahoma State? Is it Kansas State? Who do they not want to see twice the most this season? Who do you think poses the most amount of opportunity to upend their season?
Man, that's a tough question, but I think the only answer you can kind of sort of you know, respond to that to is either obviously Texas, just because of the pageantry of that rivalry, but I'm going to go a little off base and go with Kansas State.
Hmm.
Chris Kleiman has showed that he kind of has Lincoln Riley's number. He beat him twice. OU even struggled with him at times 2 weeks ago in Manhattan. Again, I think when OU would get rolling by the time that November rolls around, or December, I don't even know what time the Big 12 championship happens now, but I think that OU would end up being okay. Also, I think this is just one of the weaker Big 12 years and one of the weaker years in terms of talent in college football, just in general. It's kind of weird when you look at the AP poll and see like Oklahoma State is 12. They're not a bad football team, but like they've clearly struggled with teams that they probably shouldn't have, just like kind of everyone this season. So we'll see. I think as the season goes on, there's going to be a lot of surprises and a lot of new faces and spots that fans probably aren't, you know, necessarily used to.
I like it. I like it. Remaining schedule questions. Who do you have circled that you're most curious about for OU down the stretch here?
I'm gonna go with OSU, Oklahoma State. That game is in Stillwater this year, which can be a pretty tough place to play at times, and that game is typically, you know, last game of the year. And that game, with Oklahoma State keeps playing the way they're playing, you know, that could be a game that sort of, you know, has playoff implications. And, you know, either one of those teams is, I think, you know, there's a pretty safe prediction that people could be making that, you know, Oklahoma State and OU play each other again for the Big 12 championship after playing each other last week of the season. So I think that's something that could be really interesting to see going forward. But yeah, I mean, that's one of the ones that I'm sort of circling that could be tough. Lincoln Riley hasn't lost Oklahoma State yet as head coach, but OU hasn't really necessarily struggled in that game in the past, but you know, that's one of the sneakier matchups that I think they could have problems with.
That's interesting, because I don't think they strike me at all as a team. Like you said, Lincoln's never lost to them. I still think they have a lot of problems with that offense. I don't know if they can score enough. They kind of seem like a poor man's Kansas State in terms of how they'll match up against Oklahoma to me. Baylor, what we've seen so thus far, and having to go to Waco before Iowa State and Oklahoma State to wrap up the season. Like, with Baylor, I think they had 525 yards total this week. Jeff Grimes has completely transformed that offense very, very quickly in Waco. Yeah. I'm very curious to see how Oklahoma plays and how they tackle, especially this Baylor offense, because I don't know. My gut tells me that's going to be a high scoring affair, and I'm not saying that they're going to win, that the Baylor Bears are going to win that game, but it is a big, big test, and that is something Dave Aranda and the Baylor Bears absolutely would love nothing more than to have that one. So I am very, very curious on November 13th what Baylor looks like and Jeff Grimes does against that Alex Grinch defense.
No, I totally agree with you on that sentiment there. Waco has, you know, been a tough place to play for a while now. And I would imagine that game is probably played at night, and you know, maybe they go, you know, with the blackout with the crowd that they've done in years past. I think that's what they do, but that could be a really tough environment for, you know, let's say Caleb Williams is starting in that game as a freshman going into an hostile environment like that, and you know, Baylor was still, you know, sort of on the rise last year. It wasn't necessarily one of the better teams in the Big 12, but, you know, Dave Aranda has obviously been pretty successful against OU in the past. He did it at LSU. Even last year, I think the final score was, you know, 20. I think OU only scored 24 points last year in that win. I definitely agree with you that could be another tough game. And, you know, sort of in the Big 12 is, everyone sort of poses a pretty tough challenge to almost everyone in the Big 12, other than probably Kansas. But, you know, it's a weird league where sort of everyone just kind of beats up on each other.
Absolutely. Well, what can we check out from you in Oklahoma coverage this week, Austin?
Yeah, so we're here, and OU is here in Norman, so there's three of us at OU Daily Sports. Quick shout out, Mason Young, Chandler Engelbrett. We're the three sports editors here. So we're going to venture to Lincoln Riley's weekly press conference tomorrow. We got another quick one on Wednesday and a quick one on Thursday. And, you know, we're going to we have coverage every day here, and lots of enterprise, lots of long form stuff. you know, we truly think we do some of the best coverage on this beat, despite being just students. So, yeah, check us out on Twitter. We're all pretty active on Twitter. My at is awesome, Kurt Wright. Little pin in there, but yeah, check us out on oudaily.com and can see our content there for free.
Go do that. Keep up the great work, my friend. Thank you so much for making the time. I greatly appreciate it.
Cool. Thank you so much for having me.
All right, the Monday night edition of the Chase Thomas podcast rolls along, where I am now joined by one of my favorite beat writers across all of college football. It's Michelle Gardner. Michelle, good evening. How are you?
I'm great. Thanks for having me.
Thanks for being here. So does it feel like the Stanford game was forever ago now? Have you already moved forward? Does it feel like that happened just a lifetime ago at this point?
Absolutely, especially because it was a Friday night game and I had all of Saturday to literally sit down and watch every other college football game. So that's the benefit of your team playing on Friday, is you can really sit through a Saturday and watch as much college football as you want, which I did.
It's nice. Like, Tennessee opened their season, I think it was on a Thursday, actually, against Bowling Green. So it was already out of the way, and I didn't have to think about them on Saturday, and I could just focus on other teams. It's pretty nice not to, like, allocate that time, especially being here and going to the games. It just it complicates things a little bit, but hey, these are fun problems to have. So if you had to explain what happened in that game, because a lot of people have tried to get a good read on the Stanford Cardinal, Tanner McKee, and what he's been doing this season in Stanford, just the way they've been playing and the ups and downs of their season, very, very confusing to figure out who David Shaw's team is. But I think Arizona State is far less difficult to figure out at this point. But if you had to explain what happened in that game on Friday night, what happened against Stanford? Why were they able to win so handedly?
Well, ASU basically made Stanford a one-dimensional team. They literally could not run the ball. They finished the night with 9 yards rushing. And at that point, they just kind of gave up running the ball, because ASU has, and they've done that pretty much all year. They've done a very good job on the other team's running back or running quarterback. So that's something that they've done well. And, you know, and Stanford doesn't run the ball. This isn't Stanford ground and pound like it was however many years ago. They don't have those kind of backs right now. So Tanner McKee kind of had to pass the ball a lot. He threw 45 times. That's a lot. Came into the game with no interceptions. ASU picked him off 3 times. And yes, he had 300 plus yards passing, but when you make a team you make a team one dimensional, that kind of plays right into ASU's hands. And they picked off 3 passes. One of them was a brilliant interception. It was the one that they turned into the final score, where Jack Jones made the pick and he literally got a tackler on top of him and he's falling to the ground, and he flipped the ball to DeAndre Pierce, who was like 2 feet from him, and DeAndre Pierce ran 27 yards for a touchdown. It was field awareness that was unbelievable. So that was the final score. And ASU really kind of controlled that game from start to finish.
Yeah. I mean, ASU is just, I mean, that's why I'm so interested to see what happens with Utah, and we'll see. We'll talk about that in a little bit, but they're very different. And ASU, I mean, when you think of the Pac-12, you don't really think of this kind of playing style. And I think when people think about Jaden Daniels, they think about the high octane offense and everything. But in reality, it's Antonio Pierce, and it's this defense, and they're kind of suffocating, and Tyler Johnson being special. Like, Arizona State knows exactly who they are, and they're now figuring some stuff out where it's like, oh, they know how to play their brand of football that will win football games, especially in the Pac-12. It's just very different than the kind of Pac-12 offenses and Pac-12 games that we're accustomed to, right?
Well, you know, it's been kind of a strange go for this team, because it's been kind of a slow growing process. And if you were to watch them the first few games of the season, they were underwhelming. And I'll go back to the loss to BYU, where everybody here was hitting the panic switch.
Yeah.
Losing that. Granted, BYU is a great team, but when you have 16 penalties for 135 yards, that is what got people's attention here. And just people were kind of in panic mode. And then they come in the next game and they beat Colorado, but it's Colorado. They're not you know, they're a bottom tier team in the Pac-12. So then the fans were kind of like, okay, well, it's a little bit better, but it's only Colorado. But I think where it turned was the UCLA game. And they were, the way they won that game, and they shut out UCLA in the second half at home, that doesn't happen to the Bruins very often. So I think that's the game that kind of got people's attention, got people back on the bandwagon, got this team a little bit more confident in what they do, and they've just kind of built on that.
Do you think Jaden Daniels and Zach Hill have found the right rhythm with one another?
Absolutely. I think when you go back to last year, the one thing everybody forgets is ASU only played four games last year. So I don't think we saw the growth out of Jaden Daniels last year that we wanted to see, simply because it was new offense, new group of receivers. It was a month between the first game and the second game. So I don't really think he had the growth last year that you want your quarterback to have as a sophomore. So now you fast forward to this year, and he's a junior, but technically he's probably late his sophomore year if you count the games he played last year with this year. So I think we're just now seeing the evolution of Jaden Daniels and kind of him blossoming into what we thought he was going to be. And I think he's getting more and more comfortable with this group of wide receivers. And again, that comes back to last year where they were kind of still a work in the work in progress. And I think just now they're kind of hitting their stride.
Yeah, and I think that's important because the Pac-12, I mean, we have, I don't think anybody saw the Pac-12 unfolding like it has before the season. The Pac-12 is just, I think the Big 12 is pretty normal. The Big 10, the SEC for the most part, all pretty normal. I don't think the Pac-12 is about what we expected prior to the season. Or did you see it unfolding like this for ASU and the rest of this conference thus far?
As far as ASU, yes. I think this is what we expected. They had 20 returning starters. I think when you have 20 returning starters, and if you look on both sides of the ball, we're not just talking starters. We're talking starters that have been in their third year and some fourth year as a starter. You look at a guy like Chase Lucas, he's started 43, I think, games in his career at ASU. So you're looking at a veteran team. So I think that is what people expected. You know, when you look at some of the other teams, yeah, I don't think anybody expected USC to self-implode like they have. They're kind of a train wreck. That's a polite way to put it. UCLA, I think people thought was going to be better. Utah, I don't think people knew really what to expect. And then when their quarterback left, they've kind of been, you know, a little bit hard to figure out. And then, of course, with the tragedies they've had in the last year, they've been kind of hard to peg. Arizona is still Arizona. So as far as the South, I don't think it's much different than what we thought. And in the North, I think that we thought a lot of those teams would be better, quite frankly. And Oregon State's probably the surprise team there. But when you look at the injuries that Oregon has suffered lately, I don't think there's a juggernaut team in the North that whoever wins the South is going to have to deal with. I mean, Oregon's good, but they're not what we thought they were going to be just because of the injuries. So whoever comes out of the South, whether it's ASU or Utah or whoever, UCLA, I think I like the chances of the South team.
Yeah, I agree. And it's interesting because I think it's still far, far too early to talk about playoff. Have you asked Herm about it? Is that something that you think this group is thinking about, like they have to just really be careful, because after this Utah game, the rest of the schedule, I'm going to assume the Sun Devils are favored in every game the rest of the way. Would you expect that?
Yes. Yeah, I do. They've got USC at home, and that's why I think this is a pivotal game here, because
yes,
should ASU win, now they've got the tiebreaker on Utah, the tiebreaker on UCLA. USC's already got three losses. If ASU were to slip up against one of those North teams, it's not a disaster. So they're buying themselves a little room for error. So I definitely see this game. And Herm is like every other coach. He's going to say one game at a time, and that's the mantra. And we're all tired of hearing it. I think as reporters, we get sick of coaches using that every single time we talk to them. But as far as this team goes, it pretty much is Rose Bowl or bust because of the number of players returning. That's what their sights were set on. And I don't think anything less than that they're going to be happy with. And then the other thing, if you really want to look further down the line from an outsider perspective, when you've got this NCAA investigation looming, you've got a lot of seniors on this team. And then with this investigation looming, the recruiting class has taken a hit. Who knows what kind of talent they're going to be bringing in or be able to bring in next year. Who knows if this coaching staff's going to be here. If it's not, then they're starting over from square zero again. So this has got to be the year for a lot of reasons.
Yeah, I don't know if people are ready for Arizona State to crash the college football playoff party, but I think if they can get through the Utah game, that is very much a possibility, especially when people are talking about Cincinnati, because Arizona State would have a better case at 11-1 versus a 12-0 Cincinnati, 13-0 Cincinnati. So we shall see. But there's still a lot of football to be played. We're still at the midway point. They still got a very dangerous Utah team that we'll get to in a second. What did you make of that lateral defensive touchdown? Were you able to talk to them about that?
The one where Jack Jones pitched it to Pierce.
Yes.
Oh yeah, definitely. That's all I wrote about the next day, and they said they actually practiced that play.
Really? Okay.
And the other thing you need to remember is that DeAndre Pierce. I don't know if people know this. Some people may not, but DeAndre Pierce and Jack Jones were high school teammates.
Hmm.
Okay. And guess who was their high school coach? Antonio Pierce.
That's what. Yeah.
Okay, so that's what Antonio said after the game. We asked him if he'd seen a play like that before, and he said, yeah, Long Beach Poly. And Jack said after the game that, yeah, they practiced that. Herm kind of laughed when we asked him about it because he's kind of gone on record as being kind of the old school guy, and he doesn't necessarily like the trick plays that Zach Hill draws up on offense, and he said he just shakes his head and hopes they work. So we kind of asked him, okay, what about a trick play on defense? And he kind of just started laughing too. He said, hey, as long as it works, it looks great if it works. If we'd have fumbled, you would have seen a very angry head coach. But that was definitely the talking point after the game.
That's funny. What makes Tyler Johnson so special?
Oof. He's a different kind of dude. That's all I can tell you. He's got a motor. When he wants to play, he can dominate. But you just never know what Tyler Johnson you're getting on a given day. And it's kind of a standing joke among us media sorts that he finds a way to miss spring practice every spring. He's got some injury or some ailment. He's going to find a way to miss spring practice. This year, I think it was a knee thing or minor knee procedure. And you just never know what you're going to get out of him. But when you dial that guy up, he's unblockable. And I think he's got NFL potential. I think the scouts are drooling over him. But it's if Tyler wants to do that, if he wants to play, and he can be that good. I mean, his father played in the NFL, so he knows he's got coaching. He knows what it takes to get there. But, when they moved him last year from linebacker to defensive end, it was to get a pass rush and improve that area of their game. And he did it. And like I said, he's unblockable when he wants to play.
Absolutely. Absolutely. What is Herm better about in game wise in 2021 than he was in 2020?
2020, you just throw out the window because it was such a disaster.
Yeah.
I don't think anybody was good at anything in 2020. I think Herm is very good at managing his team and managing the personalities on his team.
Mm-hmm.
He's very good at keeping kind of an even keel. Not getting too high with the high moments, not getting too low with the low moments. And I think we've seen that with this investigation. He's done everything he can to block out the outside noise so that the players can just kind of focus on their task at hand. And he does that very well. As far as where he's gotten better, I don't think his philosophy has changed much. He's always been kind of an old school coach, a run the ball kind of coach. I'm going to be really upset, if he is gone as of the result of this investigation, I'm going to be upset because he really is a joy to deal with. And, I'm not even going to go into, the allegations, what's there, what's not, what's been proven, what's not, because I don't have it all in front of me. But he's just, from a media standpoint, he's a gem to deal with on our end.
I mean, I know we don't have to get into it. That's like a whole separate pod, but I don't think we're going to get an answer on that one anytime soon based on what we've learned from the NCAA and how teams are operating these days on this kind of stuff. Do you think the defense is good enough to run the table in the Pac-12 this year? It sounds like you do.
Yeah, I do. Again, because they're veterans. Now, where I've been a little bit surprised is the defensive line, because losing Jermaine Lole for the season is a huge hit. I can't even tell you how big a hit that is. That's a guy that would have been a four-year starter. Hard guy to replace. And then they lose Travez Moore in a BYU game to a season-ending knee injury. Not a starter, but he's a key rotation player, and he's one of their best edge pass rushers. And I believe in the fourth quarter of the UCLA game, at one point they had four freshmen in the game, and one of them was a walk-on on the defensive line. So that's been an area that I've been surprised with, just because of how many young players they've had to play and how they've performed. And actually, before Tyler Johnson's two sacks in the game, their leading sack guy was a walk-on, a true freshman, B.J. Green, was leading them in sacks. They didn't think B.J. Green was a walk-on that came here because he knew he had a godfather that knew Robert Rodriguez, the D-line coach. And when does a walk-on come in with a Power 5 team and earn significant playing time? I mean, it's been unbelievable. So I look at Robert Rodriguez, the D-line coach, and he's done phenomenal things with a lot of young players that are playing more than they probably were hoping they would have to. So that's an area of the team that I continually am surprised with, and the fact that they've been able to get pressure on the quarterback no matter who they put in, no matter who they rotate in.
Let's talk Utah. Michelle, how big is this game for the Utes and the Sun Devils? How do you see this matchup going? What are your early thoughts on how the Sun Devils match up? How do they match up containing the new starter and Rising? I mean, this has just been a crazy year with Brewer leaving after getting benched, and obviously the tragedy that has just, it's unbelievable what Whittingham and this group have dealt with Lowe and Ty Jordan before that. And I believe they were at the funeral today for Lowe.
They were today. You know, and I asked Herm that today. That was my question to him is, you know, a team dealing with a tragedy like this, is it a, you know, rally together moment? Is it a distraction? And he said he can't speak for Utah because he's not in their situation, but he said he's dealt with it when he's had teammates that, you know, he's dealt with that from a player standpoint. But, you know, it's really hard to tell. Are they going to rally the troops and it's going to bring them together, or is it a distraction? So he said maybe they get some closure today with the funeral. The last time ASU played at Utah, it wasn't a good thing in their favor. I think they had 136 yards total offense in that game. That was a little bit of a different game because it was Jaden Daniels' true freshman year. They were starting two true freshmen on the offensive line, and that was the Utah team that had like five beasts on the defensive line. It was seriously a mismatch. So I think that ASU is better equipped to handle the environment and what they're going to be facing, but because they've seen it before. I really honestly think this could go either way. One minute I'm thinking ASU wins it, and then I'm thinking Utah wins it. I think from a talent level, I think ASU's got better talent and they've got more playing time together as a unit, so I would favor them there. But the road's a great equalizer, and as we saw when ASU played BYU, when they literally couldn't get a snap off without a false start penalty, that'll come into play. Now, they've said that they have worked on that and they don't foresee that being an issue again. We'll see. I just think this game's a total toss-up, and I would be surprised if either team won by more than a score.
Interesting. So what's your final prediction? It is Monday, 10:52 East Coast time, Michelle. What do you think you're going to be writing on Sunday? Do you think you're going to be writing ASU is on their way to a Pac-12 title game? Or, okay, what's next? How do we regroup? How do they figure this out down the stretch?
You know, like I said, I changed my mind 1 minute to the next, and we're all, it's only Monday, and I could definitely change my mind by Saturday. I like ASU's chances. I'm not saying that I don't like Utah. I've been very impressed with Utah, what Utah has done. And the way they completely took apart USC was very, very impressive. I think, you know, they don't have that dominant running back that they've had in past years. I think ASU's done a very good job stopping other teams' running games, and that's where I like ASU. And I also like the rushing attack. I mean, nobody has really stopped the rushing attack. UCLA came into that game with ASU ranked fifth in the country, only allowing 63 yards rushing, and ASU ran for, I want to say 170 on them. So ASU's been able to run the ball, and that's kind of a great equalizer too. When you, and it's not just one running back. They've got three very good running backs. So I like ASU's ability to come in and run the ball, particularly if the weather, who knows what the weather is going to be. It could be cold. It could be raining. It could be snowing. Who knows? So I like ASU's ability to run the ball, and I like the way they play against the run. So maybe I favor ASU, but I also wouldn't be surprised if Utah won the game either.
Okay. I'm leaning ASU. I think ASU's in good shape here, and I don't know. I'm still not 100% on Cam Rising, so we'll see. We'll see if this continues. It's more of a lightning in a bottle thing for me, because we've seen that Utah offense very, very differently for the most part for this year, last year. I don't know. Michelle, what can we check out from you this week at AZ Central?
Well, you know what? I'm not doing football Tuesday and Wednesday because I'm off to Pac-12 Media Day for basketball. So I'm actually turning football coverage over to some colleagues for Tuesday and Wednesday, which is really strange. It's hard for me to do because I've been football intensive since, you know, the end of July. But yeah, I'll be heading to Pac-12 Media Day for women's basketball on Tuesday and men's basketball Wednesday, back home Thursday, and then getting on a plane for Utah on Friday. So, hey, it's not just one sport this time of year, right?
Absolutely, absolutely. What's the biggest difference? And we'll wrap up here. The biggest difference between Bobby Hurley and Herm Edwards is what?
Oof. You know what? They're a lot alike, really. When you get down to it, you know what? I'll tell you what the difference is. Hurley is definitely the fiery guy. Herm is Mr. Composed on the sidelines, and he doesn't, like I said, he doesn't get too up, doesn't get too emotional, kind of keeps just kind of an even keel. And Bobby's the guy that's in the referee's face, and he's, you know, he was that way as a competitor. He was a player. That's the way he was. He was a feisty guy. So from that standpoint, that's the probably the biggest difference. But Bobby's great to deal with, too, from a reporter standpoint. You like coaches that give you something that's, you know, articulate, well thought out. He's engaging. He's very cooperative with the media. So from that standpoint, he is much the same as Herm. And, you know, they're both, you know, East Coast guys. You know, Bobby's from the East Coast and Herm played on the East Coast. And so they are a lot alike, but I would say their temperament in game, that's the biggest difference.
Huh. Very interesting. Very interesting. I like it. Well, Michelle, safe travels this week. Good luck to you. And thank you so much for making the time. I greatly appreciate it.
Anytime.
Nicely done, nephew. Chase Thomas Podcast. Hell yeah.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.